Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sam Ficken now on the near hash with a 35-yard attempt. Tyler Yazian will snap it. Ryan Kaiser will put it down. Angle to his left. Good snap, put down. The kick by Sam Ficken is up, and the kick by Sam Ficken is good. And the Nittany Lions take the opening drive and get three on the board.
Schlegel under center, sends Turber in motion behind the quarterback. And this time they'll give it to McCreary. Right side to the five, to the two, touchdown! Shikalemi, McCreary off the right side, races it in for 8 yards and a touchdown. 6-0, Shikalemi.
Yazian will snap it. On the money, put down, Kaiser, kick is up, and the kick by Sam Ficken is good, and the Nittany Lions are 2-for-2 in their drives tonight. They're back within a point, 7-6 Michigan, with 52 seconds to go in the opening quarter.
Schaefer, back to pass, Schlegel stumbles, fires it to Turber, and he's caught on the tip by Schaefer, in for the touchdown!
Yazian will snap it. On the money, put down, Kaiser, kick is up, and the kick by Sam Ficken is good, and the Nittany Lions are 2-for-2 in their drives tonight. They're back within a point, 7-6 Michigan, with 52 seconds to go in the opening quarter.
For the halfback pass is Campbell. Campbell, long downfield, picked off by Turber at the 10-yard line, breaks a tackle, now comes to the near side, needs a blocker, turns it to the 15, to the 20, to the 25, and knocked out of bounds at the 27-yard line. With 5 seconds to go, the second Shamokin turnover of the ball game, and that one stops the Shamokin drive.
One to the far side. Hackenberg in the gun on third and goal at the 10. Gets the snap. Back he goes. Time waits over the middle. Hamilton's there. Got it. Touchdown. Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead and cash in the takeaway for 7.
Shotgun. Sidecar right. Here's the handoff. Nope. It's going to be Yost himself in the 20. 15. Down to the 10. To the 5. And touchdown. Shamokin has taken the lead for the first time tonight with 6:24 remaining in the ballgame. It is 20-13.
And he is to the right of Devin Gardner on second down, 20, their own 37. Four-man front. Gardner wants to throw. Pressure. Screen pass intercepted. Intercepted by Anthony Settle at the 30-yard line and down to the 29. The second consecutive year that Anthony Settle has picked off Devin Gardner.
From Friday and Saturday, looking back at the weekend, the other part to look back at the weekend deals with the Steelers, who yesterday, the Eagles won big last night, beat the Giants. Huge win for Philadelphia to keep them tied with Dallas for first in the NFC East after the Cowboys were ultra impressive in their win at Seattle yesterday. Meanwhile, on the other end of the scale, the Browns took out the Steelers with ease yesterday. And as we do every Monday, we bring in Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. Dave, welcome. I'm sure you've looked at the tape.
Unfortunately, 3 times already.
And did it get any better any one of the 3 times?
No, they got blown out, unfortunately, all 3 times. And look, you know what's I think the most surprising thing about this game is you know, it's almost like a boxer, you know, winding up and swinging that right arm, you know, and letting you know the right's coming, and you still aren't able to defend against it. And you know, we talked, I believe, last week heading into this week that this outside zone, you know, is something that I was worried about, even though the Steelers had defended the run well the last 3 previous games leading up to this game against the Browns. I wasn't convinced that the defense was fixed, because none of the 3 teams that they just got done with run the outside zone to the degree and have the success that the Browns do. So going into this and looking at the tape, you could tell that the Steelers were concerned about stopping the run. You saw Troy Polamalu down in the box quite a bit. But even though they knew it was coming outside of the first, you know, once they got past the first couple of series, the Browns kept with it. And then we saw them do some of the same things that they did in the second or in the first and second half of the game back in week one, running the play action and the boot off of that. And what makes it so crazy is Brian Hoyer only attempted 17 passes in that game, and he only completed 8 of them.
Right.
But of those 8, 5 of those, I believe, went for 24 yards or more. And, of course, they had a couple of those, quite a few of them over 30 yards as well, too. So, you know, that was the difference in the game. The defense had no answer. Of course, it didn't help that the offense didn't put up any points. But, you know, the defense really had no answer for something that they knew was going to be coming out at them in this game.
On two of those big plays, and especially when the game was closer, Troy Polamalu is the guy that's out of position. Why is he struggling so much? I mean, it doesn't look like he's reading it right.
Yeah, and you know, we've yet to see the all 22 of that. That'll hopefully come out, you know, later tonight after the Monday night game. But you know, we've got enough of the TV tape to kind of get a look at it, and especially the first one, the long pass down the right sideline to Jordan Cameron.
Yep.
And on that play, you know, it's a three. They have they have 13 personnel on the field, which is three tight end set. And Troy, it looks like, you know, lets his guy, which is Jordan Cameron, go across the formation. And Cameron sold it well, like he's going to the second level to get a block on the linebacker, and then he releases. Well, at the same time, Cortez Allen is carrying the guy on the opposite, the other receiver on the upper opposite side of the field, all the way across the field. And you know, I'd like to see the all 22, but I mean, it looks like Troy decided to bail out and then try to help up underneath of the receiver coming across the field, when at the same time you had Cortez Allen having underneath on that receiver and Mike Mitchell over the top of that. So, you know, I'd like to take a look at this, but it did look like Troy gambled on this, gave up on the tight end going across the formation, who eventually worked his way across the field. And then Hoyer, you know, credit him, play action rolls out to the opposite side. He threw that ball, I think, 25 or 30 yards in the air across the field to a wide open Jordan Cameron. But to answer your question too, I think Troy has been gambling quite a bit lately. I don't think he's playing smart at times, and a lot of these gambles that he's making are resulting in big explosive plays. And you know, that wasn't the only thing. He missed one of the runs that resulted in a touchdown later on in the game. Troy Polamalu came up to fill that hole. He only gets an arm tackle on him. Ben Tate, I believe, who was carrying the football at that time. You're not going to tackle Ben Tate with arms. So it wasn't a great game for Troy Polamalu at all, and he needs to start trying to play more within the system, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's just an example, but still, he is supposed to be one of your savviest players, so I think you need him to play like your savviest player. When you look at the offense, Dree Archer, what can he contribute that as a spot player can make him a difference maker?
You know, back when he was drafted, it was one of the head scratchers that I had in this draft in the third round. For A, I think he was drafted a round earlier, even though it was late third round. Remember that this was one of those compensatory picks at the end of that third round. So technically, I guess you could say, you know, consider it sort of a fourth round pick. But you know, his size, he's like a little bit, you know, a beefier version of a Chris Rainey, who of course didn't work out with the Steelers. You know, I think they're doing their best with him to get him some snaps and get him on the field offensively. But you know, he's not a guy either that I don't think you're going to have success trying to line him up in the slot quite a bit, because of his size. All they have to do is kind of press on him. He's probably going to be easily knocked off of his route that way. I think he's just a guy that you just try to continue to do what you do with him. Occasionally line him up outside, maybe a bubble screen out in space, maybe a quick curl pattern out in space. But yeah, you're going to be hard pressed to get the ball in his hands more than five times a game. And in fact, I think he only played four or five snaps in that game yesterday. And you know, in order to get him on the field, you're going to have to pull somebody off of it on top of it. And you really don't want to pull Le'Veon Bell off the field if you can help it.
All right, exactly. Next up, they've got a Monday night game, and that is going to be a week from tonight when they take on the Houston Texans, Bill O'Brien's team. And that means containing J.J. Watt, and it might also mean containing Jadeveon Clowney, because Clowney might be back. How concerned are you after some of the pressure Ben fought off yesterday as to what Watt and maybe Clowney can do?
I'm very concerned because, I mean, just look at how J.J. Watt nearly single-handedly won that game coming back against the Colts.
I know.
The other night. You know, normally one guy on defense can make an impact, but to take it over, especially a defensive lineman like that, is just incredible. I mean, there's not enough good adjectives to use to describe what a phenomenal player that J.J. Watt is. And then, as you said, throw in the possibility of Jadeveon Clowney being back from his injury for this game as well, too. I think what you'll see, look, the Steelers are coming back home now for the next three games. We haven't seen a lot of this no huddle that's been talked about all offseason. I think you'll see quite a bit of that in this game to try to keep the Texans' defense off balance here. But, I mean, they're going to have their hands full. We've seen at times, you know, teams triple team J.J. Watt in order to try to slow him down. And I think you're going to at least see several double teams. You're going to probably have to keep your tight ends in quite a bit and make sure your backs chip on him as much as possible. But he's still going to get his. I mean, I'd be shocked if we come out of that game and J.J. Watt doesn't have two sacks. Then you flip it over to the offensive side of the ball. Let's not forget that the Houston Texans have this back named Arian Foster.
Yes.
And they also, much like the Cleveland Browns, they've run that outside zone. And yeah, Arian Foster has run that outside zone for several years now. And when you consider that Ryan Fitzpatrick, another no-name quarterback for the most part, it has been decent off of play action this year.
Yeah.
Man, the Steelers are a four-point favorite right now, but I tell you, I'd be hard pressed to bet that they cover that, let alone win it.
One of the areas that's rarely talked about when you talk about football, and we talk about it from time to time, in this, you play offense to what your defense is, and you play defense to what your offense is. And my broadcast partner for Penn State Football, Jack Hamm, he and I were talking on the phone this morning. And I said, you know, probably the best defensive team, I said, you were probably on, was probably that 76 team that didn't make the playoffs but had that run and got to, 10-4, I think. I said, and Kruzak was the quarterback. He said, that's a perfect example of that. Maybe they're not, is it possible, Dave, that they're not going no huddle right now because of all the injuries they have on defense and they don't want to speed the game up?
That very well could be, and that could be very well what we saw them start the game yesterday after passing the very first play, something like 11 or 12 straight runs after that, trying to slow the game down. Well, do you remember how quick that first quarter went yesterday?
Right.
I mean, it was just incredible how quick it went, and the Steelers had a huge advantage, in total yards. In fact, I think the Browns had negative yardage at the end of that first quarter.
They did, so, minus one. Minus one at the end of the quarter. Yep.
Right. So, it very well could be, but, you know, if you're going to run the football like that, we can't forget that the goal is to put the ball in the end zone. And to expect your team to drive 10, 11 plays with most of it being on the ground, I think you're really asking a lot. Now, they did have success doing that. But, you know, as I wrote in one of my posts this morning on Steelers Depot was, you've got to work in some play action off of that, especially when you have the defense kind of sucked up in there into the box, on their heels trying to stop that run. They've got to mix in more play action. And Ben Roethlisberger has proven over the years to be a very good play action quarterback. So, shame on them. I understand where you're coming from. It wouldn't make good reason, but still, injuries aside, this defense knew this was coming, but they just couldn't stop it. And even though Brian Hoyer only completed eight passes in that game, it was more than enough.
Yeah, the question's more about getting into their head as to what they might be thinking as opposed to awesome analysis. All right. Dave, thanks so much. As always, you have awesome analysis. I only ask questions. So I appreciate the time as always. I can't wait to talk to you next Monday before the Monday night game.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, things hold true. Win one, lose one. Win one, lose one. Hopefully we're talking about a win. Steve, you asked great questions, so don't swipe yourself. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Dave, so much. Appreciate it.
Dave Bryant, SteelerDepot.com. Dave on next Monday night before the Steelers take on the Texans. Brandy Gotten later in the week to talk about the Eagles and their extremely impressive win over the Giants last night. The Giants' offensive line was dominated completely by the Philadelphia defensive front last night. Completely. Wild. Completely owned it. It's going to be very interesting to see when the Eagles play the Cowboys and that offensive line. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Insuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, what are you driving this week from Sunbury Motors?
This week we're featuring the 2014 Kia Sportage SX all-wheel drive. It's their highest-ranked small SUV, initial quality by J.D. Power & Associates. So it has the 5-star crash safety for overall rating. Plus, it has the ability to go into all-wheel drive automatically, so you don't even have to hit a button if you don't want to. If it notices that there's a little bit of slippage, it'll automatically flip into all-wheel drive and you'll be good to go. And if you need it, like you're going up a hill, you can actually lock it into all-wheel drive. If you remember when you had a 4x4, you had four-wheel low, four-wheel high, and you had to decide between the two? Well, this is like locking the all-wheel drive in place is like four-wheel low. So you do have that option on this particular all-wheel drive, a 2014 Kia Sportage SX from Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Check it out at Kevin Herr, or if you follow me, or if you're a friend on Facebook, you can see it on Facebook as well.
Well done.
You're a friend on Facebook, aren't you, Steve?
No. I think it's always appropriate that we do these things about you and Sunbury Motors and also feature it on a day with Purdy Insurance. All right, so perfect. I mean, do they have enough insurance for you?
I realize the irony in that, okay? I do see the irony in that.
No, I don't see any irony at all. All right, our number 800-795-9565. Look, I'm not seeing anything I didn't expect. I go back to 2012. And in 2012, the number of conversations I had with Bill O'Brien, and he warned me repeatedly that the year that worried him, this is in 2012, was 2014. And he says 15 maybe as well. Now, I think the dynamics on 15 have changed since we had that conversation. Because, you know, it's not just a conversation. I'm talking Bill and I had probably 5 or 6 different conversations about 2014. Long before 2014 ever came up. And when you do this and you take a long look at it, it's frustrating to watch how it plays out. Where, for example, you run a fake punt, right? Now, me, I dump the ball inside the 10-yard line. course, I haven't won any games in my career either. But if you take a long look at what they've done, okay, what happens is that when you have a program, Bucknell has what? How many scholarships did you say they have? 64, 63?
I think it's 63 is what runs in my head.
Penn State is 64. Ohio State is 85. And don't sit there and say, well, you know, every program has walk-ons that get scholarships. Very few. Penn State's one of the few that does it the way they do it. I mean, when they talk about 85 scholarship guys, almost all the teams have 85, probably over 80 scholarship guys. Especially in today's way today's game is played recruiting-wise. Now, James Franklin and his staff knew what they were getting into. All right, they knew what they were getting into. I understood that. But here's my point. If the coaches were doing all the same things 6 years from now in the sixth year, I would be concerned if I were you as a fan. I don't get concerned because it's the sixth game based on the circumstances that they have. If this were year six, I think you'd have a lot of legitimate complaints. After game six, I think you have to understand this isn't the 80s, 90s, and 2000s where it's 85 against 85.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. So, a bye week. Oh boy, another one. Yay! Another one. You know. And our number is 800-795-9565. 800-795-9565. You want to jump in? Questions, comments, whatever. I mean, this, you know, Michigan's not a good football team. I mean, that's what really stings about this whole deal is that they could be had, the games for the taking in their place. And you know, part of the problem, you know, I've heard enough about, you know, Christian Hackenberg, they, you know, he's not getting better, blah, 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 blah. It's all, you know, blah, 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 blah. Fine. Well, he needs a little more time to do something. You can't, there are parts of the offense you can't run right now. How many times can you put five in the pattern? Okay. Not many. A lot of times now you have to keep a running back in. Sometimes you have to chip with a tight end so you can only get three out there. I mean, there's a lot of things that you're trying to compensate for right now. Eli Manning was protected in three games through nine touchdowns and interception. He played the Eagles last night. And he looked like Tony Eason. The domino effect is huge. And there really isn't a lot you can do about it. Oh, I know what the other question was. You asked, why didn't Bill O'Brien recruit offensive linemen? He recruited some. That was the other question you had. I knew there was another one.
Well, no, it's not a question that I had. It's a question that was asked for me to ask you.
Okay.
It wasn't a question that I had.
Okay. Let's examine the numbers. How many offensive linemen are you going to recruit when you have 15 recruits?
I'm going to say zero.
No, I mean, there are a couple.
You're not going to recruit 15.
Right. He recruited Andrew Nelson. He recruited Brendan Mann. And he recruited Tyler Hartman. All right. In that grouping. He did not recruit Donovan Smith. He did not recruit Ange Mangiero. He did not recruit those guys. And he did not start the recruitment of Brian Gaia or Derek Dowry. He did not recruit Miles Diefenbach either. But the guys, he recruited Nelson, who's going to be a good player. Brendan Mann, he's going to be a good player. And Hartman was another guy. But that's the big problem that you have. You have, when you're told you have 15 scholarships that you can give out max, okay? You now have to make decisions as to what you do with those scholarships. How do you put together a group? Essentially, where Penn State is right now, Penn State essentially right now is 21 scholarships down from the opponent. That is a full recruiting class. And that's why Bill O'Brien recruited some offensive linemen, but he couldn't go overboard recruiting offensive linemen left and right. Because he had to be very selective as to how he recruited. All right, I need a quarterback. I need some wideouts. I need some guys that can play DB. I need some guys that can play linebacker. And you have to do this all within a span of 15 guys. Because you were told you had to be down to 65. So everything is not as easy, simple, black and white, and everything else. Because, again, I don't think that some fans have adapted to the idea that, guess what? Everybody else is at full strength and you aren't. It becomes ultra frustrating that when you're in a game with Michigan on a night where they can be had. Okay, there's your margin of error coming into play. Penn State turns the ball over one time in the game. One should be okay. You should be able to get away with one. Nope. That led to a field goal. In a game where you could not have a field goal. Okay? And now you have to be able to punt the ball. Okay? You've got to be able to change field position. When you're not playing, when you are struggling offensively, you need your defense to play great and you need your special teams to be good. Now, the good part of special teams is Sam Ficken. He has kicked off well. He's had touchbacks. Penn State's coverage on kick returns has been very good so far. They've been able to keep teams inside the 25. To me, anything inside the 25, you've done your job on kick returns in terms of kick coverage. That's been fine. If Penn State gets the ball to the 30-yard line, I'm very confident they're going to get points, that Sam Ficken will give them at least three out of that drive if they can get the ball to the 30. So in terms of margin of error there, the margin of error offensively, in terms of the ability to get points on a drive that goes someplace, is actually pretty good because of him. Now the question is, can you finish off enough drives, and can you get touchdowns and not field goals? But if you get the ball, I'm talking about, but in the special teams realm, if he kicks the ball, you know, you feel pretty good you're going to get points out of it. Okay, punt coverage, okay, except they gave up the return to Shuler. They can't give up any returns. The punting of the football the other night was not good. It wasn't good. Michigan starts three drives on Penn State's side of the field consecutively. Now, Michigan had scored a touchdown this season on every drive this year when they started on the plus side of the field until Saturday night. And in those three sequences right there, it was a punt, it was a field goal, a punt, and a field goal. You know how many yards Michigan gained in those three drives? 32. 32 yards. And when you're struggling offensively, you need your defense to play great, and you need your special teams to play great, and Penn State has been getting great defensive play, but they've been getting mixed results, some really good and some not so good out of special teams. And everyone knows they're struggling offensively. I mean, everybody knows that. That's not a revelation. Everybody knows they're struggling running the ball, struggling protecting. And the problem is that when you have to max protect, you can't put five in the pattern. You struggle to put four in the pattern. Also, you also struggle as to what patterns you can run. You know, when can I take shots down the field with a quarterback who has a fabulous arm? Well, to take a shot down the field, you need a couple of seconds extra to do it. So, I mean, that's where you are. And this was all by design. Okay? The sanctions were put in place not to be a pinprick. They were put in place to be a hammer. They were put in place so that you were going to be knocked down. We're going to let you play. Okay? Because we don't want to give out the death penalty. We're going to let you play because you're going to need the revenue for your other sports. We're going to let you play, oh, by the way, because there are television contracts and it's good for the conference that you play. But we're going to do it in such a way where you're going to be wounded for a long period of time. Now, they've allowed some scholarships back, but again, that's another magic wand. You just don't go from wherever, and all, now you have 75 scholarships. Mathematically, you can't do that. There are rules in place. Well, you're going to have 85. No, you can't have 85 next year either. There are rules in place. It's a fact of life, and it's unfortunate that it's happened this way. It's also unfortunate that there isn't an adaptation in mindset as to. Well, wait a minute, hold on a second here. You can't sit there and have the mindset that it's still 85 against 85. That's not where it is. Thus, when you get the opportunity, like the Michigan game the other night, where you feel like you lost the game instead of Michigan winning it, that you feel like you let one get by. That hurts. There's no doubt about that. That hurts. Because obviously Michigan's not a good football team, but what's their excuse? They don't have any. And this is the year and Bill talked a little, I think 15 is a little bit better off than 14 is, only because now at least you've been able to rebuild some scholarships. James Franklin and his staff knew this coming in. It has tested their creativity beyond words. I mean, it even tests your creativity as to how you do a practice. I mean, he did not do his bye week the way he did his bye weeks at Vanderbilt. because of the numbers he has. All right, we'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Here's the question of the day for you. If any of you can explain to me on the face of the earth why Todd Gurley is suspended indefinitely and Jameis Winston is playing, give me a call. All right. Can anybody answer that question? That's the state of college football right now. Todd Gurley is not playing. Jameis Winston is. Can you explain it?
No. I'm trying to find the. I spent earlier part of the day trying to find a reason for it. And the only thing you could find is Jimbo Fisher saying that we believe in him 100%. And the facts are the facts.
Yeah.
I think he said, here's what it was. I know the facts in the case. The facts haven't changed in the case. We know the report and know everything out there. There's nothing new out there. We've been through this.
Yeah, I know. I saw the quote. Yeah. Now let me take a separate incident away from what was alleged that night. Okay. Let's talk about his BB gun incident in 2012. He cost $4,000. He helped to cause $4,000 worth of damage. You know that?
I remember you saying that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that was disciplined internally, though.
Yep. Let me take another tact here so you understand. Would you say that's kids being kids?
At that age, I have trouble with that.
Okay. Here's my issue with it. What about the person who's the victim in this, who gets up, goes to work that day, has ideas as to how they're going to do, you know, handle the next month or so of their life as to what they're going to do, and all of a sudden, okay, now they have to spend time assessing the damage, have to spend time calling the insurance company, has to then get estimates on how to fix things. Has to then go back to the insurance company. Then has to set up to get whatever fixed. Okay. What about the massive amount of inconvenience caused to that person because it's just one of those innocent things? Really?
I don't know. At that age, the BB gun thing.
I don't care what age he is.
Well, I mean, okay. if you're talking, you know, about a junior high player, maybe you could say it was kids with making bad decisions. Yeah. But at his age, that's a hard one to sell.
But see, the person who had to go through and call the insurance company, go assess the damage, had to take all the time out of their life. All right. To get this straightened out and fixed. Oh, and by the way, probably received some verbal abuse from some fans who said, well, what are you picking on him for? I was like, yeah, really? You want to come over and fix it? It's, you know, there are victims in these cases. You know, it isn't just, you know, these aren't self-inflicted wounds here. So, yeah.
I think the scary part is if you are a fan of Florida State, the fact that it looks like a series of incidences now, not just one rare occurrence or one occurrence and then another one that's just a little bit different. This is a series of questionable choices. This is a series of questionable choices, to put it politely.
He's up to five. And as I've said before, if I'm at a draft room and his name's up there, I look at everybody and I say, take his name off the board.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely.
I do not want him on my football team. Take his name off the board. We will figure out another way.
Or you structure a contract around it.
No, there will be no contract around it. He will not be on my draft board. I want character people. I want talent, but I want character people too. I want somebody that the community is going to rally around, as well as having, obviously, the talent to play the game. Okay? Peyton Manning, you can rally around. Drew Brees, you can rally around. Tom Brady, you can rally around. Aaron Rodgers, you can rally around. Andrew Luck, you can rally around. You know, Matt Ryan may not be in the elite group, but he's very good. You can rally around a guy like that, you know? Because that person is going to be, like it or not, the face of your franchise. Like it or not, Ben Roethlisberger is the face of your franchise. Like it or not, Nick Foles at the moment, ups and downs, whatever, face of your franchise. Who's the face of the Dallas Cowboys? Tony Romo.
Tony Romo? I was going to say Tony Romo.
I mean, who's the face of the 49ers now?
Well, that's obviously Kaepernick.
Okay. Third year quarterback, who's the face of Seattle? Is it Pete Carroll or is it Russell Wilson? It's really Russell Wilson. You know, in a lot of ways, it becomes, quote, like it's your team. Like it's LeBron's team in Cleveland. It's Kobe's team with the Lakers. It's Durant's team in Oklahoma City, even though he's hurt right now. Hey, that's who's going to be the face. So this is the person you want to draft to be the face of your franchise? Okay. Russell Wilson ends up being the face of my franchise. I'm looking around going, I'm feeling pretty darn good about life. He's talented and appears on the surface to be a class act and mature. Over time, it's been amazing that guys who are drafted that have baggage, you would be shocked how they arrive at your station with their baggage. Stunner, huh?